Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Looks like must love.
Yes, it does. Enough musk love to go around. You remember last year when Tesla and SpaceX chairman Elon Musk told a group of advertisers, "You can go F yourselves," and he spelled out the word. I mean, he pronounced the whole word. Well, it's a different year and a different approach from Elon Musk towards advertisers. He dialed back that comment to advertisers, saying he only meant the message for brands that would not enable free speech. See how he did that? He was at the Cannes Lions Festival this week. That's a festival of advertisers and people who want to woo advertisers in Cannes. Yes, it's glamorous in a different way. He's trying to win back advertisers after many fled X, formerly Twitter, after Musk's own controversial posts. Brands ceasing advertising on X over such concerns were effectively committing blackmail, he said last year. But this week, speaking on the stage, Musk took a softer tone, touted the platform's influential users and ad targeting capabilities. They're looking at you. Musk clarified that his previous comment was not, quote, to advertisers as a whole, but rather to those insisting on censorship, unquote. He emphasized it's important that X remains a free speech platform. Quote, advertisers have a right to appear next to content that they think fits with their brand. That's totally cool, said Musk. What is not cool, he continued, is insisting there can be no content that disagree with on the platform. If there's a choice between censorship and money or free speech and losing money, we're going to go with the second. His message to advertisers that have left X altogether, your Disney, your IBM, your Apple, is that the platform is, quote, worth trying out because its users are, the quote, the most influential people in the world, unquote. Thanks, Elon. I appreciate that. He said brand safety is critical and insisted that every third-party reviewer has given us an A-plus on brand safety. He also said X is working on using AI to improve its ad targeting capability. They're looking at you. Quote, previously with old school Twitter, there was essentially no targeting or matching of users to ads. We're very focused on having ads shown to people that they'll find interesting, unquote. X's ad revenue went down by nearly 50% last year. Its market value has likely declined by roughly 70% since Musk bought it 2 years ago, according to the financial firm Fidelity. It's not high fidelity, but it's fidelity. But also about Musk and his works, this. A Tesla driver using the vehicle's self-driving mode crashed into a police car Thursday morning in Fullerton, that's in Orange County, south of L.A., almost hitting an officer who was investigating another crash. A Fullerton Police Department officer was investigating a fatal crash around 12:04 a.m., according to a department news release. The officer was managing traffic at the time. Emergency flares had been placed on the road, which people could see. The officer was standing outside his patrol vehicle with its emergency lights on, which people could see, and he managed to jump out of the way before the driver of a blue Tesla crashed into his car. A police dispatcher who was riding in the patrol vehicle also moved out of the way of the crash. No officers were injured. It's unknown whether the Tesla driver sustained any injuries. The Tesla driver admitted he was operating the vehicle in self-driving mode while using his cell phone. He stayed at the scene and cooperated with the investigation. At last, ladies and gentlemen, we have a self-crashing car. Hello, welcome to the show.
She's come undone. She didn't know what she was headed for. And when I found what she was headed for, it was too late. She's come undone. She found a mountain that was far too high. And when she found out she couldn't fly, lost the sun. She's come undone. No, 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 no. Too many mountains and not enough stairs to climb. Too many churches and not enough truth. Too many eyes to see, too many lives to lead, and not enough time. It's too late, she's gone too far, she's lost the sun. She's come undone.
From Santa Monica, California, home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. So often I bring you bad news, discouraging news, angering news. Here's a little bit of good news. One of the world's rarest cats, the Iberian lynx, is no longer endangered. The lynxes are, having a big celebration this weekend. This is a report from the International Union for the Conservation of Nature, the organization which categorizes species according to the level of risk they face, bumped the Iberian lynx from endangered to vulnerable. Hey, we're all vulnerable. That's what it means to be human or Iberian. There has been a significant surge in numbers, so the Iberian lynx has been doing what comes naturally a little more often. Its population grew from 62 mature individuals in 2001 to 648 a couple of years ago. Young and mature lynx combined now have an estimated population of more than 2,000. And maybe too many lynxes. As the name suggests, the wildcat species calls the Iberian Peninsula home. That's your Spain and your Portugal. According to the latest census data, yes, they fill out census forms. They're smart. There were a total of 14 clusters where the animals were stable. That's more than there are of humans. And reproducing, of those 13 were located in Spain, one in Portugal. Wildcat used to be common across the whole of the peninsula. Starting in the 60s, its numbers plummeted. Habitat loss, poaching, and road accidents, you know, your self-crashing cars, all helped to push the species to the brink of extinction, but now it's coming back. The increase largely due to the conservation efforts that have focused on increasing the abundance of its main food source, the also endangered wild rabbit, also known as the European rabbit. He says, "What's up, Doc?" with an accent. Programs to free hundreds of captive lynxes and restoring scrublands and forests have also played an important role in ensuring the lynx is no longer engaged in endangered status. Francisco Javier Salcedo Ortiz, a coordinator responsible for leading the conservation action, described it as, quote, "the greatest recovery of a cat species ever achieved through conservation," unquote. So look out. Here come the cats and Mrs. Cats. And now a story about America's race history that I don't think was published in any American medium. It's from the BBC. And it echoes something that I know from personal knowledge about Santa Monica, whence this program originates. There used to be a prosperous black community, black neighborhood in Santa Monica. And in the, I think, 1940s, it was destroyed to make room for a new civic center, which includes an auditorium that is now unused. But this is about another place, nearer someplace you've heard of. A thriving all-black community flourished just outside Washington, D.C., until its nearly 1,000 residents were forcibly displaced. The little-known city is finally being honored. The stout, jug-like building rises 35 feet above the greenery of Arlington, Virginia's Metropolitan Park, amid Amazon's or near Amazon's new HQ headquarters. Constructed from 5,000-odd red bricks, the structure feels both industrial and earthy. Stepping inside, the small space reveals hundreds of glistening glazed ceramic bulbs cascading from above in waves of blue, green, and brown. This is Queen City, an art installation that pays homage to the 903 African-American residents of the all-black community known as Queen City, who were forcibly removed from their homes in the early 1940s to make way for the construction of the Pentagon. Well, of course. Why would you want to live there? "What they did to us was an atrocity," said 93-year-old Dr. William Volan. He remembers his childhood in Queen City before he and his family were kicked out. Quote, "There was an alleyway with small houses on each side. We had a black fire department, churches, barbershops, all kinds of businesses. He and his friends used to play and walk to school together. There was, big surprise, no running water or electricity, although those were common in white neighborhoods at the time. But Queen City residents made do in their tight-knit community," says Volan. "It was like one big family," unquote. And now,
we've got the ultra-modern knack of getting oil from the deepest crack. So give the boys just a bit of slack and say a hearty what the frack.
The fracking boom is going, not bust, but maybe dry. The U.S. oil industry fracking division has a double-edged problem. It's running out of fresh water while being overwhelmed by chemical-laced liquids. I like the lacing. It's pretty. This is from Politico. In some areas of the Permian Basin, which is mainly Texas, nearly 5 barrels of briny water comes out of the ground for every 1 barrel of crude oil. Well, let's drive on the water. Until recently, operators in the prolific region in Texas and New Mexico relied almost exclusively on re-injecting that liquid, the briny water, back into the ground. Came out of there. Why wouldn't they want it back? Or pumping it into, these sound good, open-air waste pits. Wouldn't you like to live near an open-air waste pit? Come on. It's like one big family. But after earthquakes were linked to the re-injections and water officials warned of dwindling freshwater and groundwater supplies, states, oil companies, and critics have been looking at ways to reuse this so-called produced water. It's raising concerns of the long-term impacts of reusing produced water and its potential impact on groundwater. Quote, you have to know with certainty what the contaminants are in the produced water and know with certainty that you can treat those out to a level of safety both for aquatic life and for drinking water purposes, says a senior attorney with the Western Environmental Law Center. Quote, we're a long way off from there, unquote. Texas oil and gas agencies in the process of rewriting rules for how produced water can be used. Could include agriculture. You're eating it. And even discharging it into dry riverbeds. To Rusty Smith, director of the Texas Produced Water Research Consortium, the situation presents, quote, an opportunity to kill two birds with one stone, unquote, without using any stones. The state of Texas, who has a massive incoming water shortage, is trying to find all the potential solutions to this water problem that they have, Smith said, shedding his accent. As much as 14 million barrels of wastewater are churned out of the Permian Basin every day. Enough water to fill more than 54 Olympic swimming pools every day. The Permian accounts for nearly 50% of all U.S. oil production. It's become ground zero for produced water as Texas works to lessen the number of earthquakes that have been caused by re-injecting the water deep into the earth. It's mostly up to states themselves to govern how produced water is handled and whether it can be reused. Produced water is already being used, and discharge EPA granted permits that allowed produced water to be discharged into the Susquehanna River in Pennsylvania. Have a drink. It meets, says the EPA, 40 different contaminant criteria concentrations. Nice alliteration. Produced water has been used in test projects to irrigate crops in parts of Southern California, like where I'm sitting now, probably. It's good. And a now defunct Arkansas energy company also got an EPA permit to discharge produced water into the White River, now called the Brown River. But environmental groups and health advocates worry the water, which contains naturally radioactive minerals, oil, fracking lubricants, and other chemicals, could wreak havoc on the environment and human health if it's discharged or used in a way where humans could consume it. That couldn't happen. Produced water is a blanket term that covers everything from used fracking fluid to ancient extra salty seawater that also gurgles up with crude oil. The chemicals and minerals in it, in produced water, vary from state to state and even from well to well. So it's not bored. What the frack? Now news of our friend the Atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save, safe, too cheap to meet. Cheap, save, too safe to meet. Save, save, too safe to meet.
Another part of the world we're screwing up. Japanese government has begun decontamination work in some areas in a town near the Fuke plant. you may remember. It was damaged in a massive quake and tsunami 13 years ago now. Some 80% of a municipality have been designated as, quote, difficult to return zones, unquote, where entry is strictly restricted following a triple meltdown at the plant. The Japanese government and the town have designated 4% of such zones as areas where residents who wish to return can live after their living areas are decontaminated. This week, workers using heavy machinery began removing soil from farmland. Well, farmland doesn't need soil. And cutting grass around residences in the Hatsuki area of the mountainous Tsushima district in a western port or western part of Nami. The government plans to decontaminate 52 hectares. Somebody out there knows what that amounts to, and demolish 71 houses and buildings in such areas by the end of next March. A senior official at the Environment Ministry said it's more difficult to decontaminate mountainous areas, but the ministry intends to proceed with the cleaning work carefully and swiftly so that residents can return as soon as possible. And make toast just by putting bread on the ground. You're probably aware of Judge Aileen Cannon in Fort Pierce, Florida. She's the judge in the Trump documents case, where he took classified documents from his office, took them down to Mar-a-Lago, kept them there, even though the feds tried to get them back, and ultimately Mar-a-Lago was raided, and then charges were filed against him for keeping confidential and sometimes classified documents without permission. He didn't need permission. And so Aileen Cannon is the judge in that case. She's been, according to most observers, slow walking the progress of the pretrial proceedings. She's now having 3 days of hearings on whether Trump or any president is immune from prosecution. And she faces a choice between shelving that motion, disregarding it as having been successfully dealt with by other judges previously, or agreeing with that motion, which would allow the special counsel Jack Smith to immediately go to a higher court, an appeals court, and try to get her thrown off the case. He would want to do that, presumably, because, according again to most people knowledgeable about the situation, she's inexperienced, and she runs a court not in Miami, where the case was filed, but in an isolated courtroom in Fort Pierce, Florida. There are no other judges around her to advise her, since she is inexperienced, having just run a few trials. And one observer described that choice for her as being in a trick bag. And I heard New Orleans.
There's a song kissing Willie across the fence. I heard you telling Willie I ain't got no sense.
is such a drag, trying to put me in a trick bag.
Sounding like New Orleans, but from Santa Monica, this is Le Show. And now, News of the Godly. Dateline La Paz, Bolivia, a Spanish Jesuit has been discovered to have documented his abuse of hundreds of indigenous girls while serving as a missionary in rural Bolivia. Atrocities which the Society of Jesus, the Jesuits, had known about since at least 2019 and did not immediately report to the civil authorities. That's unlike them. The Jesuit Father Luis Maria Roma wrote in a diary of abusing girls, whom he often lured to a river and photographed inappropriately, according to the Spanish newspaper El País. The Jesuit province in Bolivia compiled a report on Roma's acts in 2019 and withheld it from prosecutors, according to El País, which obtained a copy of the priest's diary and the Jesuits' investigation. Roma died, how convenient, August 2019, shortly before the report's completion. El País published a notarized confession by the priest, signed in May of that year, which read, quote, "I got carried away in some situations by libidinous acts inappropriate for a religious person with girls from 8 to 11 years old," unquote. In a June 16th statement this year, the Jesuits expressed deep regret that, quote, "those who are in charge of addressing the complaints of sexual abuse from girls, boys, and adolescents, and acting on behalf of the victims, were negligent, indolent, and disastrous." Here's a threesome. "Without putting victims at the center of their attention, those who acted in this way must be held responsible for their actions in handling such situations, as established by the Bolivian police justice system within the framework of due process." The current authorities in charge of the government of the Society of Jesus in Bolivia have the moral obligation not to act as was done in the past, unquote. The Jesuits urged prosecutors to reopen the case into Roma and, quote, "those considered appropriate, given the evidence of the testimony of victims and the material collected in the police raids, to establish the responsibilities of those who may have known the facts and not have acted in accordance with the law," unquote. The revelations of Roma's documented depravity, good alliteration there, documented depravity, deepened the scandal of clerical sexual abuse in the Bolivia province of the Jesuit order, where accusations of crimes committed against children by missionary priests have mounted, and Jesuit superiors are charged with covering up the offenses. That's weird. In 2023, El País published the contents of another diary. They keep diaries, these guys, kept by Father Alfonso Pedrajas, another Spanish Jesuit working in Bolivia. He described abusing at least 85 victims. He died in 2009 without facing justice. Details of Pedrajas' diary generated outrage in Bolivia. The president called on the Vatican to open its archives and threatening to scrutinize the entry of foreign priests. The Bolivian Bishops' Conference subsequently announced enhanced protocols for the protection of minors and for addressing accusations of clerical sexual abuse. Two former Jesuit provincials, Father Ramon Alaix and Father Jesus Marcos Recolons, have been charged with covering up the crimes committed by Pedrajas. News of the godly, ladies and gentlemen. And now, news of the Olympic movement. Produced by Jim Ebersole III. Well, Russia's at it again. It has ramped up its disinformation operations targeting the Paris Olympics. This time it's a new video that makes it appear as if the CIA is warning Americans about traveling in downtown Paris. The fabricated video contains a fake warning about a high risk of an attack, originating in Russian channels before making its way to X and Facebook, thanks Elon, where it's racked up at least 100,000 views across platforms. Quote, "The video is a fabrication, has no connection to CIA, and does not represent CIA's view," unquote, a CIA spokesperson. U.S. officials have not warned Americans about traveling on the metro during the games. That's their subway. The Paris Organizing Committee said, quote, "Security is the highest priority of Paris 2024. Actually, their highest priority is issuing that statement. The Paris Olympics could be the hottest games on record. Leading athletes warn that the intense heat forecast for competition could lead to athletes collapsing or, in a worst-case scenario, dying in competition. A new report focusing on the last Olympics in Tokyo, quote, offered a window into an alarming escalating norm for Summer Olympics. Those games were described as the hottest in history. Quote, competitors vomited and fainted at finish lines. I didn't see that on NBC. Wheelchairs were deployed to carry athletes away from sun-scorched arenas. And the fear of dying on court was raised mid-match by the Tokyo Games number 2 seeded tennis player, Daniil Medvedev, the report says. Since 1924, when Paris last hosted the Olympics, annual temperatures there have warmed by 1.8 degrees Celsius. There are 23 more hot days and 9 more scorching days a year. Heat waves have been increasing in frequency and intensity in Paris. For athletes competing in extreme heat, the health risks run from sunburn and heat cramps through to heat exhaustion or even collapse from heat stroke, which is life-threatening. You want to live after the Olympics? One of the most prominent sponsors of the Olympics want to use some of its ad dollars to put on a show it hopes will be must-see, like the sports event itself. Procter & Gamble, which has enjoyed global rights to use the game's signature rings in its advertising since way back in 2010, is backing away from the heart-tugging ads it has run in the past. In their place, a new 6-episode competition series for NBC's Peacock streaming hub called The Other Games. There will be teams of comedians and influencers trying to win games that include P&G products like Swiffer and Cascade. "We're experimenting," says Janet Fletcher, senior director of sports marketing at Procter & Gamble. Who isn't? Oh, the Olympics. They're a movement. And we all need one every day. Now news of microplastics. And the lead sentence in this story should get the attention of at least half the audience. Microplastics have been discovered in penises for the first time. This is from The Guardian. It goes on. This raises questions about a potential role in erectile dysfunction. They got a thing for that. The revelation comes after the pollutants were recently detected in testes and semen. Male fertility has fallen in recent decades, and more research on potential harm of microplastics to reproduction is imperative, say experts. Researchers said the penis could be particularly vulnerable to contamination with microplastics due to high blood flow during erections. The study assessed tissue taken from 5 men who were undergoing surgery related to ED. Microplastics were found in 4 cases, PET and polypropylene being the most prevalent. Both are used in food and drink packaging and other everyday items. There appears to be widespread contamination of people's bodies with microplastics. Scientists find them wherever they look. The impact on health is as yet unknown, but in the lab, microplastics have been shown to cause damage to human cells. They can cause inflammation in tissue, just like air pollution particles do. And chemicals in the plastics could also cause harm. Doctors found a substantially raised risk of stroke and heart attack death in people whose arteries were contaminated with microplastics. Dr. Ranjith Ramaswamy at the University of Miami, they've got a university, says this, quote, "We found that microplastics were present in the smooth muscle of the penis. All we know is that they're not supposed to be there. We suspect it could lead to smooth muscle dysfunction. Recent studies in mice have reported that microplastics reduced sperm count and caused abnormalities and hormone disruption." Well, abnormalities, okay, right? News of microplastics. Now, news of our friend the atom. There have been recent legal developments for high-level nuclear waste storage in the Permian Basin. Why, that's where we do all the fracking. Oh, to live there. This week, officials with an oil company, Fasken Oil and Ranch, discussed what the fight is all about. Quote, "Putting the most dangerous material on Earth right above our most precious natural resource is just a bad idea," said the assistant director for lobbying and social media at the oil company. "We're not saying the nuclear waste as a whole is bad," he says, "or that disposal is bad, or even interim storage is bad. Here it is just not the right fit because we have too much at stake under the ground. We can't risk our energy security." This is Brock McNeil talking. "The most valuable natural resource isn't water, I guess." He said transportation from across the country would be one of the biggest threats. In their own report, he says they estimated for the Holtec site there would be 13 rail disasters in getting the waste simply from where it is now to the site itself. "That's 13 opportunities for radioactive casks to break open and destroy a community, destroy a ranch, destroy property, or destroy our oil and gas sector. And that's really a dangerous thing." And, unquote, "and the cooling system of a spent fuel pool for the number 6 reactor at Fook stopped temporarily for about 10 hours this week due to a power plant glitch. Kind of ironic, again. No power for the power plant. The pump sending cooling water to the spent fuel pool started working again after a high voltage circuit breaker tripped 10 hours earlier, according to TEPCO. An emergency diesel generator did start up immediately after the circuit breaker tripped, but it didn't activate the pump. TEPCO is probing the cause of the incident. I am so reassured by that, I can't tell you. Now.
It's a smart world after all. It's a smart world after all. It's a smart world after all. It's a smart, smart world.
Speaking as we were earlier of self-crashing vehicles, the British tech journal The Register reports data from more than 2,000 self-driving vehicles has contributed to a study concluding they may be safer than humans in some conditions and potentially more dangerous in others. A paper published in Nature Communications this week found that autonomous vehicles are less likely to be involved in accidents than humans in everyday scenarios, including keeping in the same lane and maintaining speed with the flow of traffic. Led by Sengchuan Ding, a PhD student at the University of Central Florida. They got it at a university. The study found that autonomous vehicles could possibly improve road safety, but there are areas that need improvement. The research found self-driving vehicles were on average 5 times more likely to have accidents in low light conditions, your early morning or dusk. They were also almost 2 times more likely to make a mistake than humans while executing turns. Turns. Researchers said their work used more data from both autonomous and human-driven vehicles than earlier studies. Said the poor performance of autonomous vehicles in low-light conditions might be attributed to, quote, a lack of situational awareness in complex driving scenarios and limited driving experience. Improving autonomous vehicle performance in such conditions might involve, quote, advanced sensors, robust algorithms, and smart design considerations, unquote. Yeah, we need some smart designs. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Cleveland Mayor Justin Bibb made a comment about a car crash he was involved in last Thursday morning, issuing a short statement in which he said the driver of his security detail exhibited, quote, bad judgment, unquote, and, quote, his actions are not something I condone, unquote. The mayor took responsibility and apologized. The mayor's vehicle drove through an intersection during a red light. According to eyewitnesses, Mayor was seen with a cut on his head. Dateline Tokyo Toyota Motor President and CEO Sato Koji apologized to customers and shareholders about the company's failure to follow vehicle testing procedures. This is from NHK. Sato pledged to prevent a recurrence at a shareholders' meeting this week. Toyota earlier this month admitted it falsified data to obtain government test certificates for its vehicles. The automaker has suspended production of 3 models as a result. Sato apologized for causing concern among customers and shareholders. Dateline Vermont, a Republican lawmaker, apologized before the Vermont House of Representatives this week to a Democratic colleague for repeatedly pouring water into his tote bag. That's what our politicians are doing now. Fallout from the strange incident spilled onto the House floor at the start of a session when Representative Mary Morrissey, Republican of Bennington, rose to her feet. She apologized to Democrat from Bennington, Representative Jim Carroll, for what she called her, quote, disrespectful conduct, unquote. Quote, I'm truly ashamed of my actions, Morrissey said in a halting voice. She was caught on video pouring cups of water into Carroll's canvas tote bag as it hung outside a community room. a committee room. Carol, the victim, used a spy camera mounted in the hallway to find out how his bag was getting wet on what he said was a nearly daily basis. The videos clearly showed Morrissey dousing his bag with a cup of liquid on two different days in July. Morrissey said she'd personally apologized to Carol and publicly, and said she planned to make amends through the ethics committee process. Quote, it was conduct most becoming of my position as a representative and as a human being. Carol said he heard the sincerity in her voice, but he was sad that Morrissey hadn't come forward before the videos caught her in the act. From Chicago Guns, our next apology, the city on this week's beginning Monday issued a formal apology to black Chicagoans for the harm that slavery, Jim Crow laws, and present-day policies have had on them and their descendants. Acknowledges included in an executive order signed by Mayor Brandon Johnson creating a, quote, reparations task force to develop a black reparations agenda, unquote. It will ultimately offer recommendations on remedies to the policies that have harmed African Americans in Chicago for generations. He earmarked $500,000 in the city budget to study the issues. Quote, today's executive order is not just a public declaration, it is a pledge to shape the future of our city by confronting the legacy of inequity that has plagued Chicago for far too long, said Johnson, the city's fourth black mayor, in a statement. Quote, we're continuing to build on the bedrock of my administration to move forward in reconciliation through targeted investments aimed at rectifying decades of deliberate disinvestment in black neighborhoods and communities. Dateline Cleveland, a guest column by a New York attorney, Neil Barron, published beginning of this month in the Cleveland Plain Dealer. This is from the Plain Dealer. Contains errors about FBI analyst Marcus Allen, FBI Special Agent Garrett O'Boyle, and former FBI Supervisor George Hill. Allen was not a participant in the January 6th insurrection in Washington, has never been accused of assaulting Capitol Police officers during it. O'Boyle did not claim the insurrection was set up by Democrats or post video of himself at the Capitol wearing body armor, a gas mask, and an AR-15. While George Hill has been critical of his former employer, the FBI, he did not make a quote attributed to him in the column or advocate for dismantling the FBI. Because of the errors, the column has been unpublished. The Plain Dealer and Cleveland.com apologize to Allen, Garrett, and Hill for the mistakes. Unpublished. It's new to me. New to you? The Ramapo Indian Hills Regional High School District in New Jersey apologized for an inappropriate comment that appeared in the newly issued yearbook, but said a review determined it was not intended to be malicious. We don't know what the comment was. But good on them. In a recent tweet, the co-founder of Binance, remember crypto? It's a crypto firm, issued a public apology for an inappropriate meme posted on the company's social media account. The incident involved a meme image which was not properly vetted for cultural sensitivity. Quote, we sincerely apologize, exclamation mark. The social media team has recently been onboarded and lacks the corresponding cultural background. When they saw this meme image in the community, they did not understand its meaning and posted it on X. This is our fault. We will make sure to rectify. That's Yai He, co-founder of Binance. Yai He. And John Chu, who directed Crazy Rich Asians, is apologizing for how his 2018 film portrayed South Asian characters. Speaking to Insider, the director addressed the controversy over casting actors descending from South Asian countries in stereotypical roles like domestic workers. Quote, looking back, I should have had a joke there. There's stuff to do to make them more human. Talking about a scene where armed guards, all seemingly of South Asian descent, showed up. He agreed he should have made those characters more human. He said South Asian characters also were featured in an extravagant party scene, but agreed, quote, they're just sort of there. I don't give them the space to be there. He said he felt he couldn't deviate from the film's source material, the novel of the same name, written by Kevin Kwan. That's a lesson I did not understand until it happened, he admitted. I was like, this is a book that exists, and I'm making this book into a movie. I can't add a new character into this. So hearing it from people, for me, it was a learning experience. He promised to pay more attention with his future projects. So, quote, he won't make that mistake again. Always exciting to make a new mistake. And a Republican candidate for Michigan's 8th Congressional District is being chastised on social media after a TikTok video surfaced featuring an apparently artificial intelligence-created voiceover, the late Dr. Martin Luther King, appearing to endorse the candidate. Anthony Hudson of Grand Blanc apologized for the video on social media. He said the video, which was posted by the Heartland Signal, was made after a campaign volunteer gave social media login credentials to a friend who made and uploaded the video. The video features an AI-generated voiceover of the late Dr. King appearing to spoof his own I Have a Dream speech. I have another dream, the AI-generated King says. I came back from the dead to say I have another dream that Anthony Hudson will be Michigan's 8th District's next congressman. Okay, now I'm going back to where I came from. Goodbye. The video also ends with the usual voiceover. My name is Anthony Hudson, and I approve this message. Hudson denied involvement with the creation of the video, said it was mistakenly posted after his social media credentials were given to a friend by a campaign volunteer. I'm extremely furious about this situation, said Hudson. The volunteer has been released. And finally, to soccer. I'm sorry, football. Albanian forward Mirlind Daku led fans in derogatory post-match chants about the opponent in his game, North Macedonia. He led the fans with a megaphone in derogatory remarks about that team. And he apologized this week, citing the intense emotions of playing at Euro 2024. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. Back next week, same time, same radio station, or on your audio device whenever you want it. The email address for this program, your chance to get Cars I Talk t-shirts, still, and a playlist of the music heard here on, as well as a lot of other stuff, all at harryshearer.com. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego desk, to Pam Halstead, and Thomas Walsh at WWNO New Orleans for help with today's broadcast. And hopefully, we'll meet next week. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy Radio Network. So long from Santa Monica, the home of the homeless.